Author Ben Kaplan talks his new book, Pipeline to the Pros, how D3 small college nobodies rose to rule the NBA. Will Hardy features heavily in the book. I'm JP Chunga. This is Roundball Roundup on UtahJazz.com, on the Utah Jazz Podcast Network, presented by First Colony Mortgage, the official mortgage lender of the Utah Jazz, and MLS number 3112, Equal Housing Lender. Will Hardy goes Williams to Utah. And this story's been told, said on this podcast before. He goes to college, and by the end of things, after he has a playing career, all of that, at the end, he doesn't know what he's going to do, applying to jobs, trying to figure it out. His mentor, Kurt Tong, happens to be the former athletic director at Pomona Pitzer, where Greg Popovich got his start coaching after the Air Force Academy. And that leads to an internship in San Antonio. San Antonio leads to Boston. And now he's the head coach of the Utah Jazz. You look at that story from Williams into the NBA. There have to be more like it. And there were. And Ben Kaplan saw a book. He saw this wide-ranging network of D3 players, D3 experiences that stretch to the modern NBA. Williams is the only team with lead executive, Houston Rockets, Raphael Stone, head coach, Will Hardy, and a player, Duncan Robinson. Shout out Duncan Robinson. But that doesn't happen by accident. And so Ben Kaplan made a book out of it. It's for basketball sickos like yourself. You're listening to the podcast. People who tangentially like the sport. And for anyone who wants to know about networking, rising up in their own profession. That's what this is about. People choose colleges for their networks because it exposes them to people who they think they'll meet in their profession. And that's exactly what you get with the D3 experience now. There are people at the very top. Sam Presti. He's a D3 guy at Emerson. And if you saw the Sam Presti letter over the weekend, like, that dude was a basketball sicko from the very start. Where has Celtic pride gone? The rebuilding of this once massive dynasty must begin now. And it must begin by drafting Jason Kidd. He was saying that at 16 years old to the Boston Globe. But there are people at lower levels. Assistant general managers, assistant coaches, front office staffers. D3 has invaded the NBA, and it's told through Ben Kaplan's book, Pipeline to Pros. And frankly, I want to talk to Ben because he played against Will Hardy in college. Ben was at Amherst. Will was at Williams. And I wanted to see if he had the tapes. He didn't, but he did tell a couple good stories about Will. So enjoy it. It is author Ben Kaplan. The book is Pipeline to Pros, How D3 Small College Nobodies Rose to Rule the NBA. Anywhere you get your books, you can find this one. Ben Kaplan with co-author Danny Parkins. The foreword is by Jeff Van Gundy. And Ben joins the podcast now. It's Roundball Roundup on UtahJazz.com.
I had a college roommate who's worked for the Thunder for over a dozen years. My graduate assistant coach my junior and senior year was Kobe Altman, who's the GM of the Cavs. And then another one of those people was hearing stories about that kid from Williams, Will Hardy, who he was an intern with the Spurs, and then he's working his way up. And then, you know, some of the Williams guys that I know were like, hey, I think Will might be a head coach one day. And that really keyed me in on, like, well, how widespread is this? And then in terms of, like, why, the common thread between all those people is that it wasn't really convenient for them to choose basketball, whether it's playing or coaching at a Division III level. It's not something you do for money. There's no scholarships involved. It's not something you do for fame. Even though we talked about the crowds at the Williams Amherst game, it's not a big draw. It's really, you have to love the game, and that love can carry you through when you're working jobs that aren't necessarily the most glamorous.
When did you start to think about this becoming a fully fledged book and a project that you would work on?
We started working on it or thinking about it in like mid to late 2020. And it was always something that I had noticed, but it took the time to really look into like, okay, how many coaches and executives are there in the NBA that had that Division III playing background? And at the time, it was 12 out of the 30 teams had a head coach or their lead and or their lead basketball executive had played Division III basketball. So seeing that it was almost half of the teams in the league, and then also realizing that it went back all the way to the very beginning of the NBA's founding, that made us think that this is something that's a book and not just like, you know, a fun long form article.
The Spurs have been on the forefront of this, and it's detailed in the book, dedicated its own chapter as one of the main branches of the D3 success. As you look at what the Spurs have done, how much of a credit is it to their culture, to the success of what has happened with D3 players in the NBA now?
I think they're a big piece. They're not the only piece. When you look at, we had two big chapters right in the middle of the book, and that's no coincidence. And one was about Jeff Van Gundy and some of his former assistants that had Division III playing backgrounds, like Tom Thibodeau, Steve Clifford. Jeff was also instrumental in getting his brother Stan in the league. So that was one big part of it. The Spurs are definitely another big part of it. But, you know, the NBA is a copycat league, so it takes success. And I think both all of the people in the Spurs tree and Jeff Van Gundy would say none of this happens if they didn't have the right type of superstar and those great players that allowed them to succeed. When we talked to Jeff Van Gundy, Steve Clifford, they're all talking about how great Patrick Ewing was as a superstar in terms of allowing himself to be coached and having humility, even though he was one of the best players in the league. And then everybody that you talk to from the Spurs world, they all say, hey, this starts with Tim, Tony, and Manu. If it wasn't for them, who knows what we'd be doing.
Right. You do need good players to win in the NBA. That's for sure. Now let me tell you about First Colony Mortgage. They've been serving the lending needs of Utah for more than 35 years. As a mortgage banker, First Colony Mortgage offers advantages over other lenders. Not only do they process mortgages, they also underwrite, fund, and close mortgage loans all in-house. Their expert team is ready to help you with your home financing needs. Just check them out. First Colony Mortgage, the official mortgage lender of the Utah Jazz.
There's so much luck involved in all these stories. Like, you know, you read business books and they try to tell you like the four keys to success, and if you follow these, you'll have success. I think the good thing is, of basically all but maybe a handful of the people we talk to, the first thing they would say is like, I got so lucky. Yes, I worked hard. Yeah, I think I'm pretty good at this, but it takes an immense amount of luck to be one of 30 head coaches. There are more than 30 people qualified to be a head coach in the NBA. There are more than 30 people qualified to be an executive in the NBA. It takes a lot of luck to land in one of those roles. And then even when you expand it out as like an intern, it takes a lot of luck to land one of those roles. And the luck that Will had is that Greg Popovich has a Division III background himself. He's open to people that come from high academic D3 residential colleges because he knows the basketball is good. And he knows that you're getting well-rounded, really smart kids that bring a lot to the table. And so when he was looking for an intern, he talked to Coach Tong, who was the athletic director at Pomona when he was there, one of Coach Popovich's closest friends, who happened to form this incredible bond with Will Hardy when Will was a Williams College player. And so it's just little breaks like that that open the door a crack, and then Will did everything in his power to push that door open even more.
One of my favorite passages about Will and the relationship that he had with Pop is concerning one-on-one film sessions. When Hardy was elevated to head video coordinator, he would often watch film one-on-one with Popovich. During those sessions, Popovich would pick arguments, stating a questionable opinion about a counter or a wrinkle to see if Hardy would take the bait and fight back. And then it goes on to explain about relationship conflict and past conflict as two ways to get to the right answer of things with the way that the Spurs were working. How did Greg Popovich not only bring on D3 guys, but enable and allow their voices to be heard in that room?
I think when you look at one of the many reasons for the Spurs' success, besides the great players that they've had, one of the things that they had was they brought in people with diverse backgrounds, and not just, you know, diversity of where they come from or what they look like, but diversity of their playing background. So it wasn't like Coach Popovich came from the Division III background and said, okay, I love Division III, I'm going to bring in only Division III guys to come work for me. He was bringing in Division III players, former NBA players, former NBA stars, former NBA benchwarmers, you know, famously Becky Hammon, a WNBA player. Understanding that the way we can get to the right answer is having people with, you know, that come from different backgrounds, that might have different perspectives. That's part one. If you bring in all those people with different backgrounds and different perspectives, you're not going to get to the right answer if you're a domineering leader that just forces everybody to agree with you. So Coach Popovich and RC Buford and the whole Spurs organization did a really good job of getting those diverse skill sets, and then also creating an environment where not only was disagreement, especially with someone like Pop, okay, it was encouraged. He would try to force you to disagree with him, to get you comfortable with voicing your opinion, because he knew that ultimately that was going to get the team to the best outcome.
What did you learn from speaking to Will and how he reflects on his time with San Antonio?
I think the one quote that he had that really resonated with me was about, he was like, I had everything to learn, and that coaching is a profession. We think of, you know, you play basketball your whole life. Oh, you know basketball. You can just go in and start coaching it. But coaching really is, there's more to it than just understanding basketball. It's a leadership job. It's a teaching job. It's a management job. And so he had to pick all of that up and was really fortunate to have stability and be able to work in one place for a long time because of the fact that that team had success because of their great players and nobody was really leaving at the top. And also an organization that was really intentional about the way they trained people. We're going to give you exposure to the front office. We're going to give you exposure to the coaching side. We're going to get you working with players. We're also going to have you doing things that are not glamorous to make sure that you really want it. I mean, he was doing everything from driving people to and from the airport. He was, you know, making sure that people had passes ready for scouting events. And he was, you know, listening to calls and taking notes. And then at the end of that long day, because he's 6'6" and he played college basketball and he was younger at the time, like hopping on the court and working out guys. And I mean, getting that level of experience so young to see how every part of an NBA organization works is so unique.
Looking at something that didn't make the book, the Sam Presti letter to the Boston Globe, as an early indicator of someone who is, and I say this with the highest of praise, a basketball sicko, how much of that, not only are they going down a path where they're still playing basketball for the love of the game, but it's beyond love of the game. It is a heightened sense of being aware of what Jason Kidd is doing at Berkeley and how he should be the player that the Celtics tank for to get in the draft, how much of it is really, really working absurdly hard? You see it in the Jeff Van Gundy tree, how hard those guys work, but that being a part of all the success that these D3 guys have.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So we put that letter out on Twitter that we found during our research of a 16-year-old Sam Presti, you know, doing what most any of us do now on the internet, but pre-internet, saying like, hey, here's what I think the Celtics should do and here's why. Of course, it was really well-reasoned and kind of consistent with how he's built the Thunder, which made it a neat find. I think with him, so there was one response on Twitter where someone was like, see, this isn't luck. Like, this is skill. And it was like, yeah, he's probably really good at this. Mm-hmm. And he works very, very hard. But the fact that he got into the NBA is an incredible luck. Like, wild swing of events that had to happen for him to even get into that Spurs organization. But Presti had a very different college experience than Will Hardy. And it speaks to the diversity of experiences that you're going to get at the Division III level. When I talked to Will's coach his last 2 years at Williams, Mike Maker, he said, we always call ourselves the Duke of Division III. It was a program that had a lot of expectations. They had a lot of success. You know, they had their own gym. They had things that we would take for granted, but that was a program that had a lot put into it. When Sam Presti was playing at Emerson, they did not have their own home gym. They had to map quest directions to get to the games where they were playing quote unquote home games. They had to do fall workouts on outdoor court sometimes. There was a lot of adversity built into that experience, and it trained, not only did it self-select for people who are willing to put up with that to achieve their goals, but it also trained them to understand that, like, we don't make excuses. We can't control anything outside of ourselves. We're just going to control what we can control. And I think that foundation is a reason why you've seen other people with that Emerson background besides Sam not only come into the league, but have success.
Famously media reclusive Sam Presti, were you able to talk to him about the book? And if not, how do you go about trying to tell his story without getting him?
Yeah, no, we were not there. And famously media reclusive Craig Popovich, yeah, we didn't get any access from people currently within the Spurs or Thunder organizations, even though, like, we're kind of telling a fluffy story here. But that made us think about things differently, which I think ended up putting, you know, making that particular chapter about that Spurs tree even better, because we had to talk to people, you know, professors that were at Pomona with Popovich at the same time, like his academic advisor. We had to talk to people who had kind of come in and out of the Spurs organization. We had to talk to people that played with Sam at Emerson and coached at Emerson, and, you know, try to get the Emerson experience from people who maybe lived it more than just a few years like Sam did. So while it would have been great to talk to those people and especially ask Sam about what he was thinking when he wrote that letter to the Boston Globe, we had to think outside the box, and I think it made it a little bit different and I think a little bit better.
What was another thing that was left on the cutting room floor that didn't make the book that you wished it?
So much. And it was the first draft was probably twice as long as what the final product is. But yeah, I think we had a few, one person that we had to cut entirely was Bill Musselman, who, you know, now USC coach Eric Musselman's dad. And Bill coached the Cleveland Cavaliers and he coached the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he just had a fascinating coaching journey. And that started as a small college athlete at Wittenberg. But what we found out throughout our research is that he actually didn't play basketball there. He played some football, played some baseball, never actually was on the basketball team. So based on, like, the terms of the book that we were writing and the fact that we were a little bit long, we decided to cut out his story. But there were so many interesting characters that maybe they only got a sentence or two that we could have, you know, expounded on even longer, but had to keep it tight.
Do you have a favorite character in the book?
Short answer is no. Long answer is I think some of the people that I had never heard of before working on this project that had such an impact on the NBA and what it is today. And so we're talking guys like Carl Scheer, who played at Middlebury, and Carl, the, you know, before he got to Denver, when they were in the ABA, they were the Denver Rockets. He changed their color scheme. He called them the Denver Nuggets. He was the one that created that famous first dunk contest during an All-Star game, ABA All-Star game in Denver. He was the one that pitched NBA All-Star weekend. His fingerprints are all over the league today. He was one of the people that pushed for the three-point line when they were having those original arguments, which I think we have something in the book where there's a shouting match between him and Red Auerbach about, you know, putting in a three-point line in the NBA. And then another one of those characters is Norm Sanju, who is still alive today. So we actually got to talk to him for the book. And Norm was a basketball player at Grinnell College in Iowa and went on to be the founding president of the Dallas Mavericks and worked for them for a long time. So two teams that are very much alive in the playoffs today wouldn't exist without these small college guys that either founded the team or helped preserve them.
That definitely interested me almost the most, because we know about Duncan Robinson, Raphael Stone, and Will Hardy now, but the fact that this has been happening for a while and in those crazy early days before, like, they knew what they were doing almost in the NBA and it was put together by paper clips and bubble gum, that they were still contributing at a high level was pretty cool to read about this book. I enjoyed the research. I enjoyed the fact that you guys were able to tell not only the current story, but that past story as well. It was enjoyable to read.
Appreciate you saying that. And yeah, that was, as like a big NBA fan myself, that was the part that interested me the most, because I didn't know those stories. And that was a little bit of a risk that we took in writing the book, was like, hey, let's start back at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We're not going to start with Van Gundy or, you know, these names that you might know. We're going to start and try to set the foundation and help you understand like how these guys were able to come into a league that was accommodating of them.
What's been the reception that you've gotten so far, and how's the book doing?
I think it's doing all right. We, during the on sale week, we're still the number one Amazon title in basketball coaching. And we were around the top two or three in the sports industry and the top new release in the sports industry. So that was really exciting to see, a Division III book, at the top of the Amazon charts. And the reception that I was most, not concerned about, but most interested and invested in, was the reception from the Division III community. I wanted them to feel like, we did their story justice, because, you know, we're talking about a few guys from a few schools, and Division III is huge. It's the biggest of all the NCAA levels. So we weren't going to be able to hit on everyone's college and everyone's like individual experience. But the fact that we've gotten some really great comments and reception from, you know, Division III coaches, former Division III players, like that means a whole lot. And then on the flip side, like, we wanted a book that was interesting to, you know, the NBA sickos, like you said, and to hear from NBA fans who have no interest or no background in Division III and say that they've really enjoyed it. Like, that's really validating.
Coach Hickson read it yet?
I don't know. He has or he lied to me, but yeah, I sent him a copy pretty early on, before the book was released, and he got back to me and said something like, you know, this is great. All basketball fans have to read it, but all D3 people must read it. So that was pretty cool.
Hall of Famer, which David Hickson of Amherst, he was inducted in the latest class, 2023, alongside Jazz minority owner Dwayne Wade, Dirk Nowitzki, Tony Parker, Jazz TV analyst Holly Rowe as well, was awarded with the Kurt Gowdy Award during that period. So I was able to actually see Coach Hickson in person and hear his story even before this book. So it turned me on it even more when I saw that this was something that was in the ether. And then, of course, the clear Will Hardy connection brought us together. So, Ben, I appreciate you writing the book. Thank you so much for sharing it with the world. And thank you for joining Roundball Roundup on UtahJazz.com.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm a basketball sicko.